Hi, welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Will Pfeiffer, and I'm filling in for your usual hosts, Jim and Patrick, who are taking a much-deserved summer break. I'm going to mix things up a little bit today, and I'm going to reach for a different shelf. Not the usual music shelf, where your LPs or cassettes or whatever crazy format you're using might be, but the bookshelf. I've got a few ideas of books I think you might like, and it might explain a little bit about the crazy history of this thing we call rock and roll. So let's get started. First book I've got is an old favorite, and you've probably seen it in virtually every library and used bookstore you've ever been in. It's the Rolling Stone Illustrated History of Rock and Roll. My edition dates all the way back to 1980, and it was edited by Jim Miller, written by virtually everyone who has written for Rolling Stone, would write for Rolling Stone, or might one day write for Rolling Stone. The nice thing about this book is it's been reprinted and revised dozens of times, so you can always find a copy cheap. And you can find the old copies, like this 1980 copy, really cheap for just a couple of bucks. It's quite a bargain because it's like almost 500 pages long. It's really dense. There's tons of text, and it covers everything. The nice thing about the older editions is it goes very in deep into the history of rock and roll. You've got whole chapters on guys like Sam Cooke, Ray Charles, the instrumental groups, as they call it, with Duane Eddy, the girl groups, Phil Spector. Then you branch off once you hit the 70s. You know, you got your metal, you got your rock festivals, you've got something called The Sound of Hollywood. You've got a whole chapter on Steely Dan. I mean, when's the last time you saw a book with a whole chapter on Steely Dan? Of course, the book does cover, you know, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, Elvis. I mean, you know, names that you wouldn't want to leave out any, you know, out of any history of rock and roll. But the thing I really like about this book and the chapters I find myself returning to are the ones about the people I've never heard of, or maybe just barely heard of, or maybe only barely heard one song on, you know, some oldie station. It's a great book for as that kind of resource, and though you could easily look it up on the internet, you know, there's some good writers in these pages, and that's always worth checking out. I'm going to end each one of these book recommendations with little tunes, seeing that Rocking the Suburbs is, after all, a music podcast. And so instead of using what Rolling Stone founder Jan Wenner would probably prefer, Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone or a song even by the Rolling Stones, I'm going to instead play the timeless classic Dr. Hooks on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Well, we're big rock singers, we got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go.
That sounds like us.
We sing about beauty and we sing about truth at $10,000 a show.
Right.
We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills, but the thrill we've never known is the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover.
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother.
Yeah.
Stone. Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
That's a very, very good idea.
Next up, seeing as how the Rolling Stone book finished with the Anarchy in the UK chapter, I'm going to switch over to a book that directly and deeply delves into that very anarchy. It's England's Dreaming by John Savage, subtitled Anarchy, Sex Pistols, Punk Rock, and Beyond. And if you are looking for a history of punk rock, both what happened in England with the Sex Pistols and related bands, and the American bands that preceded those famous groups, this is the book to get. John Savage is an excellent writer. He's written biographies of the Kinks and other bands. And this book combines both an incisive history where he talks to just about everyone involved that he could get a hold of, fans, recording artists, executives, journalists, you name it. He also incorporates a lot of his own diaries and memories of the time of the, you know, the 70s into the 80s when all this was happening. So this book doesn't read like a dry history lesson. It reads like it was written by somebody who was there, because it was indeed written by someone who was there. I mean, it goes back, traces the roots, takes you up to the Sex Pistols crumbling, and then sort of points an arrow to what was to come, the punk of, you know, the L.A. scene or the Manchester sound or the music that followed in punk rock's footsteps. It's very entertaining. At the very least, it's going to make you want to get some records off your shelf or investigate some sounds on the internet. And one of my favorite parts of the book is the end, where Savage ends with a long and complex but very entertaining discography where he traces sort of every band mentioned in the book, from the Stooges to the Modern Lovers to, of course, the Sex Pistols to Susie and the Banshees, you name them, they're in here. And he sort of goes over their important albums, their important singles cuts, talks about what you need to listen to, talks about which albums to avoid because they're just cheap cash-in compilations. I would almost argue that the discography in the back of the book, which only takes up a fraction of the book's almost 600 pages, is worth the price alone. But there's a great book that precedes it, so it's definitely a bargain. And as a Sex Pistols song to kind of play this out, I mean, Anarchy in the UK seems just a little bit too cliched to play. So why don't we listen to Johnny Rotten and the Boys scream about the record company they hated, EMI. One guy who gets a glancing mention by John Savage in England's Dreaming is rock critic Lester Bangs, probably the most famous rock critic of all time, if only because you've seen him, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman in the movie Almost Famous. If you only know him for playing the Cameron Crowe character, sort of Jiminy Cricket, you really don't know Lester Bangs. He was a lot more complicated than that, a lot more talented, probably, I'm guessing, a lot less sort of cuddly than Philip Seymour Hoffman's portrayal. But the good thing is that even though Lester unfortunately died back in 1982, his star has only risen since then, and there are a number of books collecting his writing and looking at his life. The first and still best is a book called Psychotic Reactions and Carburetor Dung by Lester Bangs, subtitled The Work of a Legendary Critic, Rock and Roll as Literature and Literature as Rock and Roll. I don't know if I'd go so far as called literature, but it's beautifully written in a crazy, almost Hunter Thompson kind of stream of consciousness, gonzo journalism kind of a way. And the book collects hundreds of pages worth of columns that he wrote for Rolling Stone. He was a big writer for Cream magazine, which sort of let him, write in the unique style that he preferred. And he covers everything from James Taylor to the Ramones, to Richard Hell, a lot of the people of the 70s, Kraftwerk, Slade, David Bowie, Jethro Tull, Dick Clark. It's all great stuff, and even if you're not a big fan of the people he's writing about, I think you'll be a fan of Lester Bangs' writing, because he has a way of, it's hard writing about music. What is it? Elvis Costello said writing about music is like dancing about architecture or something. But Lester had a sort of a way to write to make the words on the page kind of have a musical quality of their own, and not a formal, restrained musical quality either. I mean, this is somebody slam dancing around the stage and throwing themselves into the audience. And it's no surprise that Lester Bangs was a big fan of punk rock, both the early punk of the 60s, which is where the book gets its part of its title from. I'll talk about that in a second. But also some of the legendary punks and proto-punks of the 70s. The book is pretty much worth buying, if only for the chapters on Lou Reed, who Lester had a legendary sort of rivalry with. He writes about him in a couple chapters called Let Us Now Praise Famous Death Dwarves and How to Succeed in Torture Without Really Trying. I mean, the titles alone should tell you that he had a difficult relationship with Mr. Lou Reed. And he also wrote about the Clash. He toured with them, really got to know them, and this is before they broke really big. And it's fascinating to read his story of the Clash and sort of how he went from liking them to loving them to almost worshiping them. And then in a couple of incidents, sort of being brought back down to earth that, you know, they're just people after all. They're not the perfect rock gods that Lester seemed to be searching for. There's also a great biography of Lester Bangs by rock critic Jim DeRogatis, and there are a couple other books collecting his stuff. But if you're interested in rock and roll writing at its best, I pick up Psychotic Reactions and Carburetor Dung. And as the song to play out, let's listen to Psychotic Reactions by the almost but not quite forgotten 1960s garage band The Count Five, because Lester loved it so much he turned a Yardbirds review into a review of The Count Five. I can't imagine what his editors possibly thought. Finally, going to move into the slightly more modern era by looking at a book that is a mere dozen years old or so, and it is by another rock critic, one who's very well known these days, although he seems to kind of move past simply being a rock critic. He was writing for the New York Times as their ethics columnist and that, but he still turns out some rock criticism now and then, more cultural criticism, I guess, but... That would be Chuck Klosterman, who got his start writing for the Akron Beacon Journal of all papers and soon moved up to Spin Magazine and Esquire and a lot of more you know, respectable publications, some of which are still in print. The book of his I'm focusing on, which is one of my favorites of his, is called Killing Yourself to Live. It's published in 2005, and in the book, I believe originally an assignment for Spin, Chuck went driving around this great land of ours, looking at a variety of locations where famous rock stars had died or deaths had occurred or something like that. He goes to where Lynyrd Skynyrd's plane crashed. You know, he goes to the bar or the restaurant that burned down where Great White had that concert. He goes and sees where Kurt Cobain killed himself, all that sort of thing. So it's interesting, you know, in sort of just a reporting sort of thing. If you're intrigued by that, the grim end of some rock and roll legends. But as with all Klosterman stuff, it's heavily autobiographical. He writes as much about the car trip he's on and the girls he's thinking of and the people he encounters along the way as the various locations. And there are a lot of little digressions throughout. He explains how many CDs that he took along, and the fact that he took any CDs along should tell you how long ago this book was written. He has a little section on 10 rock and roll deaths that no one ever talks about, people like Nico and Mark Bolan and Falco, who he explains was a huge hit in Europe and not the one-hit wonder we consider. So it's a funny book. It's a sad book. I like Klosterman a lot. Some people's mileage may vary on that, but if you are intrigued at all by the subject matter and you don't mind a guy getting a little self-indulgent, which is, after all, is what rock and roll is all about, I think you will like Killing Yourself to Live. And for the music to take us out of this book, because I don't think I've ever heard it on Rock in the Suburbs, and it seems like a song that should somehow get played because, damn, it gets played everywhere else, let's just listen to a little bit of Lynyrd Skynyrd's immortal Freebird. Now for that final spot on your rock and roll bookshelf, let's switch things up a little bit and do a biography. You know, if you go through rock and roll, you can name the Beatles, Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, the Sex Pistols, anyone, but really, one person, for better or worse, wrong or right, sums up sort of rock and roll in most people's minds, and that would be Elvis Presley himself. And thankfully, there's no shortage of books written about Elvis Presley. Two of the very best, written by Peter Guralnick. He wrote Last Train to Memphis, which covered Elvis's birth up until he went into the Army in 1960, I believe. But it's the second book in that series, Careless Love, subtitled The Unmaking of Elvis Presley, that I'm recommending here. Because, you know, the rise is fascinating, but the fall is always more fascinating. And this book, which starts with Elvis leaving the Army and concludes right up to his death in 1977, it's a great book. It looks at a part of Elvis after a lot of rock fans kind of write him off. You know, he wasn't really doing rock and roll. He made all those awful movies. His music became a lot more sort of corny and overblown. But his life, if anything, was much more fascinating at that point. And Peter Guralnick, I cannot imagine the level of research he did on this book. It's virtually a day-by-day, concert-by-concert, recording session-by-recording session look at the last 17 years of Elvis's life. And I found it fascinating. I came out of it liking Elvis a lot more, both as a musician and as a person. He honestly seems like he was a nice guy who got in a situation, namely being the most famous person on earth, that very few people could have withstood. And naturally, the poor guy went a little nuts. But every so often, you see sort of a glimmer of hope, a glimmer of humanity, a glimmer of that old glory that he once had. And it's just a fascinating book. And it's hard to believe, you know, 1960 to 1977, that's only 17 years. That's not very long at all. And Elvis packed a lot of living into that time. So I cannot recommend this book highly enough. It's fascinating. And as a bonus, it's beautifully written by Guralnick. So to wind this up and to pay fitting tribute to Elvis, let's listen to one of the songs that is covered in fairly deep detail in this book. One of the songs that I think people kind of thought was a little bit ridiculous when it came out. It didn't equal the raw rock and roll energy of the young Elvis, but man, it sure sounds good today. And that's Elvis Presley's Suspicious Minds.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I what you're doing to me when you don't believe a word I say. We can't go on together with suspicious minds, and we can build our dreams on suspicious.
I hope you enjoyed that little tour of the rock and roll bookshelf. Again, my name is Will Pfeiffer, and you can follow me on Twitter at Will Pfeiffer. You can listen to my comic book-based podcast, Pictures Within Pictures, which comes out about every other week. And if you're interested, you can go to my website, pfeifferland.com. Check out the graphic design section, and we'll see the thrilling story of how I designed the Rock in the Suburbs logo. If you'd like to email the Rock in the Suburbs gang, you can do so. Just send that email to rock@suburbspod.com. You can also find them on social media, @suburbspod. That's on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. I'd like to thank Jim and Patrick for letting me sit in on the Rock in the Suburbs chair. And thanks to you for listening. I hope you found it enjoyable and educational.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.